What up, y'all? I'm Logan Marie Glitterbaum, and this is the Green Market Agorist, where reduce, reuse, recycle meets agora anarchy action. Bitcoin is a decentralized peer-to-peer cryptocurrency created as an alternative to state currency, which, as many of our listeners remember, wasn't doing too hot during the 2008 crash, or really ever. Bitcoin, in many ways, was the crypto-anarchist response to Occupy Wall Street. It was a currency uncontrolled by Wall Street corporations or the state. And that's the beauty behind the code. Once it's written and released, it runs itself with no need for centralized authority or decision-making. It's really the answer to the call in the crypto-anarchist manifesto for an advancement towards a free and anonymous currency. Of course, Bitcoin itself is not anonymous. Since then, it's been used to fund many amazing projects, from It's Going Down to RiseUp.net, including this show, which, if you wish to support, you can find our coin payments link in the description where you can donate hundreds of different cryptocurrencies, as well as our affiliate link where you can sign up for an account of your own. Since its launch, Bitcoin has spawned a multitude of different spin-off forks and copycats and a myriad of services catering towards everything from exchanging to storing to anonymizing. And the blockchain technology which it is built on has led to many revolutionary advancements in a multitude of different industries. And honestly, few know this subject better than our guest today, George Connolly, who has worked on a number of different projects within the field and has written for damn near every major cryptocurrency news publication online and elsewhere. Welcome to our podcast, George. How are you doing today?
Thanks, Logan. Marie, doing great. It's a great day. I just do want to clarify, though. I've only written for a couple of smaller crypto publications.
Yeah, but you seem to have a pretty wide reach, I'd say. You're definitely one of the more well-known people in that sphere.
I'm a minor guy just trying to change the world. That's what I'm all about.
Fair enough. So, for those unfamiliar, do you wish to explain to our listeners a little bit about Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, and how you first discovered cryptocurrency and kind of got involved in everything?
Sure, yeah. So, in 2011... I was actually running agora.io, which at the time was an online agorist conference, kind of similar to the one you're doing in February.
Coup de grâce.
Yeah, and so I said, hey, I heard about Bitcoin. I said, hey, I'll take donations of Bitcoin if you want to support the event. And I got some Bitcoin. That's how I started to get into it. And I was a huge Bitcoin fan. You know, I was using Purse.io. I was accepting it for my services, my freelance services. You know, my business accepted it. You know, I was telling everybody I could about it. Huge Bitcoin fan because really, I think it is what we need. I think the root of the power of the nation state is really their ability to print money at will, because essentially it's a license to steal. And so if we can get people to stop, using nation-state fiat currencies, then I think that we can really take a lot of power away from the nation-state. You know, their printing press will run out of paper sooner rather than later. And so, I was really into Bitcoin. I also did some stuff with Steam. With Dash, I was really disappointed to see Bitcoin BTC essentially be captured and turn into a crippled coin because they refused to raise the block limit. This whole Lightning Network thing they're doing is essentially custodial, which means it's not that much different from a bank. It's certainly not uncensorable anymore.
And can you kind of break that down a little bit for our users who might not be as familiar?
Sure, you bet. So basically, the idea, the original idea with Bitcoin and the white paper, right, which was written by Satoshi Nakamoto, the pseudonymous creator of Bitcoin, was that, you know, so right now, when you send a transaction across the network, the Bitcoin network, you have, you know, a balance that's on a private key. It's a key pair. So this is basic cryptography. And you sign a statement saying that you want to send part of your balance to someone else, to another address, another cryptographic key. And so what happens is there are miners, people who process transactions and get paid to do so, and they collect all the new transactions together at any given moment. And what they do is they put them together and they create a block. And the block, what it basically is, it's a list of changes to the ledger. Because at the end of the day, Bitcoin is just a ledger. It's just like an Excel spreadsheet that says who has how many Bitcoins. Now, the problem is that as demand grew to send transactions, to transfer money, to transfer balances on the Bitcoin network, the amount of transactions that people wanted to process, because blocks happen on a firm schedule every 10 minutes, the amount of these transactions became more, they took up more disk space, more than 1 megabyte of disk space, and the people who run the Bitcoin Core software development team, which is really the only Bitcoin BTC software, they basically said, no, we don't want to have bigger blocks. We don't want to process more transactions. And what we want to do, so basically they kind of handicapped it. You know, it's like if Visa, for example, said, no, you can only have one transaction per day because we don't want to process more transactions.
And processing more transactions at once would also cut down on the environmental impact, from my understanding as well, right? Because I know a big concern for a lot of people is the energy usage of the infrastructure itself, which, I mean, is usually the side of the conversation that isn't had is the environmental impact of fiat currency as compared to cryptocurrency, which... honestly, I don't know what the environmental impact comparison is, but it's just not something ever talked about. So I'd be curious to see that.
So basically, the Bitcoin Core people said, no, we're going to build this other thing. It's called the Lightning Network, and it's extremely complex. And basically, instead of you holding your own Bitcoin using your cryptographic private key, so that it's in your control and nobody can take it from you, you basically have to give over your Bitcoin to a third party, to a custodian. So that makes it custodial. And basically, the whole idea of Bitcoin is that it's non-custodial, right? Because, for example, banks traditionally are custodial. You give them your money, and then in return, they give you a promise that you'll be able to get it back at some point, right? Well, we already know we shouldn't be relying on the promises of nation states and corporations. We need to be in control of our own money. Basically, Bitcoin Core, they took venture capital and they went off in this other direction. Basically it is tremendously handicapped the ability of the Bitcoin BTC network to be useful for commerce and trade. And that's why Bitcoin Cash, which is a fork of Bitcoin, some say, and I agree, that it's actually the true continuation of the original Bitcoin, forked off, separated in 2017. And we are committed to not having any of those limits and to serving the whole world. So the main problem that the end user sees from Bitcoin BTC is that if you want to, say you want to send $10, well, the fee on that could easily be another $10, right? And so it kind of defeats the point. Like, imagine you want to transfer somebody $10 via PayPal, and PayPal charges $10.
At that point, what's the difference between that and wiring money to people the old-fashioned way? I mean, that was always the benefit over. That was always the benefit of Bitcoin originally, was the low transaction fees. And one of the selling points that when we tried to promote it You know, with the Jacksonville Bitcoin Resource Group back in the day when I helped with them, was our founder, his family is from Brazil, and he talked a lot about being able to send money to different countries and stuff, especially for immigrants wanting to send money home to their families, and how a lot of traditional services, you try and send 200, they're lucky to get 150 of that. With, you know, with Bitcoin at the time, you send 200, they get 199 and some change. But seeing these transaction fees rise really does defeat the purpose in that sense. So seeing people try to work to solve that issue and to, like you said, you know, keep it remaining non-custodial and allowing individual self-empowerment and self-control over your finances is just, that seems way more within the spirit of it. And I've never understood why that was so controversial to begin with.
100%. Nobody understands. And that's why Bitcoin Cash exists. You know, today the fees on to use Bitcoin Cash are less than a 20th or less than a 10th of a cent. You know, it's just essentially zero for all intents and purposes. And there are so many teams now working on it. Roger Ver is working on Bitcoin Cash. You know, Kim.com. Lots of very, very interesting people building projects on it. So, and you know, I have a team that we're building the adoption of crypto education, trade, commerce using Bitcoin Cash in the developing world, Latin America, Africa, South Asia. I've been doing that for the last 3 years, basically, and it's a lot of fun. It's very, very interesting to see. You know, how people react.
Yeah, because I know just in general, cryptocurrency being really a solution for a lot of unbanked and underbanked people. I mean, I haven't had a bank account since college. I use PayPal and BitPay mostly. And it's been amazing. I can get my checks cashed through that. I can get, you know, like all anything that I need. I can go get my direct deposit, you know, directly to my BitPay account, and I don't have to deal with banks. I haven't had to deal with banks in over, you know, in a decade. And
nice. It's
definitely freeing, but also the thing is for a while, being as nomadic as I was for the longest time, and still am to a certain degree, I didn't always have, for a while I went with a local bank because of bank transfer day during Occupy, and all of us trying to move towards, you know, local banks and credit unions as part of that. And I did move to a local community bank at the time, also joined up on the Vacate Wall Street movement and started buying cryptocurrency around the same time and trying to just get away from banks altogether. And the thing that really won me over was there would be times where I'd be on the road, and since I didn't have access to my bank outside of that local area, if I was traveling around, I just wouldn't be able to put money and take money out of my account as easily. And sometimes I just wouldn't have money in my account, and banks charge you for that. They have fees for not having money, which kind of seems to, you know, be a little backwards there. But
yeah,
I ended up finally just being like, screw it, I'm actually paying more to keep this bank account that has no money in it just for the off chance that I'll need it, when I could do all my stuff online, and if I have $0 in any of those accounts, nobody's going to charge me. Like, if I just happen to do, you know, some under-the-table work where I'm getting paid mostly in cash instead of crypto, or you know, or instead of, you know, with digital fiat currency of any, you know, like digital transfer fiat currency without any of that, like, I might not have money in my accounts if I'm, you know, operating on cash at that moment for a job. So having something that's not charging me for that was a big appeal. And seeing how hard it is for some people to maintain bank accounts or even get bank accounts for those reasons, and the ways, especially in, you know, other countries where it's even harder at times to be able to have, you know, access to proper banking institutions, or, you know, in countries where they're, you know, like the U.S., where our currency is constantly being devalued. It's really seems to be a huge tool. And I mean, I know some anarchists aren't the biggest fan of money, but I mean, even those who aren't, this should be, we're not getting away from that anytime soon. This is a tool for you to take back your power in the here and now in this field.
Yeah.
And I have it's to say, super important.
I'm not a big fan of money.
Yeah.
I never really liked money. But the fact is that it's used to manipulate us.
Yeah.
And so if we're not savvy to it, we're going to be on the receiving end of that stick.
And I mean, you know, we can promote other alternatives like, you know, gift economies in certain circles or, you know, different things like that. But, and I'm all about, you know, the Moneyless Manifesto and styles like that, you know, different movements like that. But as far as that's not going to be an immediate solution, and people still need to buy stuff under our current economic system, and what's better? Like, I mean, yeah, even if it's not the most ideal, what's better than, you know, what's better? A currency that's controlled by the state and Wall Street and manipulated by corporations? Or one that, you know, we actually have more direct control over as individuals?
Mm-hmm. And the, you mentioned the unbanked. There's a such a there's such a big, big story behind that. There's an Peruvian economist of kind of associated with both the Chicago and Austrian schools of economics. He wrote The Mystery of Capital. I don't know if you're familiar with that book.
I am not.
It's a fascinating, fascinating book. So basically, he went around the developing world to find out why capitalism had not taken root. And this is not state capitalism that I'm referring to.
Yeah.
Kind of pure capitalism, if you will. Why it had not taken root in the developing world. And basically what he found was that people have, that they're actually, the so-called global poor, quote unquote, are actually richer than collectively than the developing world. They have assets. They just don't have the methods, the institutions, the habits of representing those assets in such a way that they can be turned into capital. And the prototypical example of this is the Peruvian farmer who has a piece of land. It's his. You know, all of his neighbors recognize he's using it. He's doing his thing with it. But he doesn't have a title to it in the Peruvian federal government's property registry. Right? It's because it's too expensive for him to get that title. Too expensive and too complex. And actually, there's an interesting nonprofit here in Latin America called Sujo, which helps people get that title. It's kind of a band-aid on the problem. But anyway, so because he doesn't have title, he can't go to the bank or any agency or whatever that provides credit and say, hey, I'll put up my title to the land. Now lend me the money I need to buy seeds so I can plant some corn and other crops and quinoa and whatnot. So basically, they're stuck. They're stuck scraping by because they can't get credit. And that's why, for example, in Colombia, where I live, 65% of jobs are in the informal economy. And if you're in the informal economy, like you don't have any kind of, you know, protections, like employer protections, if you're working as an independent or you have a small business, like it's probably not registered as such, you know, because also the taxes and the fees and the paperwork are oppressive. Hernando de Soto did an experiment in his hometown of Lima, Peru, where he had some students register a company, you know, like registering an LLC. And it took them literally 3 months working full time. And that's just one piece of the puzzle. The, you know, people talk about regulations, regulatory compliance. In the developing world, all of this has been used to create a privileged marketplace where a few privileged can operate, you know, like with banks and loans and stocks and all that stuff. But the huge, huge majority of the population is locked out. They are financially excluded. And you know, Hernando de Soto, really, he actually even ran for president in Peru to change all of this. And he, you know, he came close. He didn't win. But even though they made a few token reforms, the problem still persists with great severity in Peru. And to me, this just says, like, there's, you know, the nation states are not going to fix this problem. We have to fix this problem, and we can all benefit, because the more people who are engaging in trade and commerce, the more people who are learning or inventing things, that benefits us all, you know? And that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen unless libertarians, anarchists, agorists, whatever we want to call ourselves, unless we step up and do something about it. And that's a great part of the thrust of what I'm doing in the developing world.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's just amazing to see how far this entire community has progressed since the launch of Bitcoin. And just to see how much it's kind of fulfilled a lot of the goals that crypto anarchists have had for a long time. And of course, you know, one of the things that I mentioned earlier is that one of the goals that crypto anarchists had was, you know, having a digital currency that was more anonymous. And I know a lot of people have misconceptions that Bitcoin is a lot more anonymous than it is, when in reality, it's not really an anonymous currency at all. But it can be anonymized, you know, through Tumbling and other services like that. But
due to the high fees now on Bitcoin BTC, that's really hard, because when you Tumble or Mix or CoinJoin, it generates lots and lots of transactions.
Now, how does that work with Bitcoin Cash?
So on Bitcoin Cash, we have something called Cash Fusion, and basically it trustlessly connects many different people who through their wallet. Right now it's implemented in the electroncash.org wallet. Have signaled, you know, through the wallet that they want to mix. And so all of these parties from all over the world can engage in a mixing session, and they take their current, you know, so maybe on one key they have a UTXO of 0.5 BCH, and maybe somebody has, you know, 0.2, and so they mix them all up into hundreds of very small denominations like 0.01 or 0.001, and then it gets all mixed up. It happens trustlessly. There's no central server there. And then at the end of it, there are so many possible combinations of ways that the money, the UTXOs, the balances could have been divided up, that really it would take like longer, just an extremely long time for somebody, you know, say like a chain analysis service to figure out who received. Or what addresses received, or not what address, but who received which amounts out of that mixing session. So it's extremely secure. There was an audit done on it. And because Bitcoin Cash has those extremely tiny fees, probably the lowest fees out of the top 10 or 20 cryptos, it is feasible. It is feasible to have privacy on Bitcoin Cash.
So, how does that compare to more privacy-focused cryptocurrencies such as Monero?
Yeah, so Monero, this is a key difference. So, by default, Bitcoin Cash is what's called a transparent blockchain. It's pseudonymous, not anonymous, right? And then the privacy is optional. So, with Monero, it's an opaque blockchain. It's by default, every transaction is private. Now, there, you know, I like Monero, but there are some issues about, you know, whether Chainalysis, for example, can break their encryption. There's also questions about, is it so far on transparent blockchain, you can verify how many coins have been issued, right, to ensure that there's no inflation happening behind the scenes. No unexpected inflation, no unexpected increase in the supply of coins, right? Because, for example, Bitcoin Cash is limited to a total max supply of 21 million coins ever. But with Monero, as far as I know, that's I'm not sure that that's even possible, right? Because it's an opaque blockchain. So there could be inflation happening behind the scenes that it's difficult or perhaps even impossible. You know, I'm not an expert on Monero to verify. And one problem Monero suffers from is that because it's associated with darknet markets, whatnot, even though I'm a proponent of darknet markets, free Ross, you know, but because of that, it tends to get delisted or not listed at exchanges. And so it becomes harder to enter and exit it, you know, with fiat.
Yeah, I guess Monero really hasn't had the redemption arc that Bitcoin has, because, I mean, early on, Bitcoin was very, very much associated with dark web markets in terms of, like, Silk Road and, you know, similar markets, and those still very much exist. I mean, Open Bazaar and others are still active, but I've noticed that people don't solely conflate the two anymore the way that people associate Monero. And I'm just wondering what it would take to get Monero kind of past that barrier, that perception barrier there. I guess it just needs more mass adoption is really what it is.
Here's the thing, though. When I go out and I talk to merchants in the developing world, particularly here in Medellin, Colombia, and, you know, some people quietly like the idea of being able to have privacy. But some people are, you know, as we know, fanatical fans of the nation state. And so when any, some of them have reacted quite negatively towards the idea that even of pseudonymity for crypto, that it could be used to avoid taxes. Wow, what a horrible thing.
I know, right?
For some people, that's a horrible thing, you know?
How will we ever pay for war?
And roads, yeah. some people don't react well to it. It can be an obstacle for mass adoption.
Yeah.
So that's kind of why I'm not working on Monero, even though I appreciate the people who do it. I like it. I think it's a decent project.
Hey, y'all. I just want to take a minute to remind our listeners that our friends at Brave Botanicals are offering a free ounce of kratom to first-time customers. So be sure to check out the link in the description. Take advantage of that. And check out their wide selection of kratom, CBD, and natural health products while you're there. Now back to the show. So, what kind of upcoming, you know, project and works do you, you know, things do you have in the works with Bitcoin Cash and otherwise that we can look forward to and keep track of?
So, right now, I'm participating in a hackathon run by Bitcoin Unlimited. It's at coinparty.org. I'm working with a very talented developer named Shomari Prince. And we are building uncensorable web pages that run off of the Bitcoin Cash blockchain. And indeed, due to things like React, you know, progressive web apps and whatnot, Shomari thinks it's going to be very possible that we could even run web apps off of the Bitcoin Cash blockchain, and they would be completely uncensorable. So that's a really interesting project.
This is wonderful.
And also I have my team. My team's called Pan Money. And we have a team here in Medellin, Colombia. We have a large and growing team in Caracas, Venezuela, which I think is a really interesting place for crypto adoption. We're also building up teams in sub-Saharan Africa, particularly Nigeria, South Asia, particularly Bangladesh and India. And we're going around, we're affiliating merchants, we're doing meetups, we're creating educational materials, teaching people how to use Bitcoin Cash to have more liberty, you know, to have more freedom, to protect their wealth. And it's especially interesting in Venezuela, where, you know, really protecting your wealth is really just a basic matter of survival these days due to, you know, the hyperinflation, just the completely out of control situation that's happening over there. I'm also looking to have a business plan, looking to get it funded in order to build an app that can basically put the basic tools in one place so that people can have peer-to-peer liquidity, no more reliance on centralized exchanges. You know, I have a lot of people that I like that are very friendly with at places like Binance, Kraken, etc. It's great, but the fact is that these are really being, you know, they're falling prey to the same thing. You start a business, you turn it into a corporation, it gets big, it's in a new industry, all of a sudden, hey, government's knocking at your door. And they're dictating to you how you can do business, who you can do business with. And really, you know, we can't let centralized exchanges limit our route forward. We need to push peer-to-peer liquidity, you know, like localbitcoins.com, like local.bitcoin.com, like localcryptos.com, where anybody can go to the site and find somebody who will buy their Bitcoin Cash or sell them Bitcoin Cash, and everybody's using their own bank accounts or they're meeting and exchanging cash or sending cash by mail or however they're doing it, you know, but it's outside the reach of the regulatory entities of the nation state so that we can have freedom with our money, you know?
Yeah, I really like, I mean, so, you know, a lot of sites you still have to register with your ID and stuff, but if you're using, like, local bitcoins to, you know, meet up with people and exchange cash, then you can do a lot of those sales completely off-site once you have that connections. And, you know, once you have those connections.
Sadly, I'm sorry.
Oh, continue.
I was going to say, although sadly, localbitcoins.com has finally been, you know, they've been compromised.
Have they?
They're suspending service to various parts of the United States and the world. They're requiring all kind of verification, paperwork.
So what is the best way to buy Bitcoin Cash or any other cryptocurrencies more anonymously nowadays?
I would try local.bitcoin.com and find a seller near you. Also, localcryptos.com is also an excellent marketplace. They don't have Bitcoin Cash yet, but they do have BTC, they have ETH, Litecoin. But those two marketplaces are great. And there are many other peer-to-peer marketplaces like that, like CryptoWay in Venezuela, there's Seacoins in Colombia. It's really an emerging industry.
Nice. Yeah, and for those who...
I wanted to touch on a point you made earlier about the energy consumption of Bitcoin mining. I was talking with an associate of mine in Bitcoin Cash, Jonathan Tooman, who is a miner and a developer. He was telling me recently about how, I don't know if you're familiar, when they mine oil, crude oil, often there's also a discharge of natural gas. And so what a lot of these places do, a lot of these mines in Central Asia, Venezuela, and other places, is they flare it. They just light it on fire, right? So they're just constantly burning off the natural gas. So they're wasting it, and it creates all kinds of additional pollution. Like there are places in, he was telling me about a New York Times article in about a village in Iraq where they're doing this, and like everybody has cancer, everybody's face is sunburned from all the flames from flaring off the gas.
Oof.
So what some people in the Bitcoin mining space are doing now is they're going to these places, they're capturing that natural gas, they're diverting it, they're burning it super cleanly because the flaring process doesn't burn it cleanly. It actually generates a bunch of noxious gases. So they divert it, they burn it super cleanly, and they use that to mine Bitcoin or Bitcoin Cash. And that's a new trend that I thought it was very positive.
I know there's also just a huge trend amongst cryptocurrency enthusiasts of using, you know, solar and other forms of renewable energies to power their things.
Geothermal.
Like, yeah, and I've heard of really, like, a lot of really cool projects that try and utilize the excess heat and energy generated as well. I've seen some where people are using the heat generated from mining operations to heat houses. There's some attempts to do the same thing with, like, to heat greenhouses for certain types of, to grow certain types of plants, more tropical plants. You know, it's really cool the things that can be done with these setups when you have kind of a social ecological outlook on things. And
definitely,
I don't know, like, and I find that cryptocurrency enthusiasts, you know, tend to actually be into a lot of environmental technologies. And I think it's because a lot of early agorism, especially the work of people like Carl Hess, was so centered on the use of appropriate technology, both as a means towards self-sufficiency and a means of environmental harmony.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a big Carl Hess fan. I have a couple of his books here on my bookshelf.
Yeah, I've actually been working with a group to make PDFs of a lot of his out-of-print work that is harder to find, and hopefully maybe even republish some of his work soon that's out of print, depending on how we can work with the copyrights. So, because sadly, intellectual property is a thing.
Oh, yeah. His story is so fascinating, how he went from, he had some high position, I don't remember what it was.
He was a speechwriter.
Oh, right. For Reagan, wasn't it?
Yeah, for Reagan, for Barry Goldwater, for like a bunch of Republicans.
Yeah. And then something happened, and all of a sudden he started living a very simple, like, DIY life.
Yeah, started hanging out with all the anarcho-communists and reading Emma Goldman and being like, hey, I kind of like this stuff. How can I integrate this into my worldview? And now we have some pretty interesting stuff to come of it. I mean, honestly, he's been a huge inspiration on a lot of libertarian movements, both right and left, and, you know, otherwise. It's just absolutely amazing. And he's one of those very unifying figures that I absolutely look up to in that sense. And I find even a lot of anti-capitalist anarchists really respect what he had to say and what he did with his activism and his life and his work. So, we need more people like Carl Hess, is what I'm saying.
Definitely.
So yeah. Definitely. To kind of wrap up, I know that you are going to be joining us this coup de grace. For those who are unaware, Crew Domain, our crew behind the Coup Domain Land Project, is bringing back Coup de Grace this year for the second year in a row, although it will be digital this year due to the pandemic and some other setbacks and restrictions, and we're going to take advantage of that, though, and make it better than ever. So what can we expect from you, George?
So my you know, my whole thing, you know, I've been involved. I mean, I guess I got my start in all of this by reading Ayn Rand in 1991. I got into a lot more stuff. You know, I was influenced a lot by the C4SS guys in late 2000s, late for, you know, noughts.
Nice.
And really, I just want to put all of this stuff into practice, you know, and not just like, you know, as some like Free State Project people do, where they go and they buy some land and they you know, get their own cows and raise their own peas and stuff. You know, that's not enough. Like, it has to impact the whole world, in my humble opinion. And so I want to see a global evolution, a voluntarist, agorist, whatever you want to call it, ANCAP. I'm not such a huge fan of it. I'd say I'm more of a mutualist, tending towards mutualist than I do tend toward ANCAP. I like a lot of ANCAPs. But I want to see that kind of evolution. I want to see it happen everywhere. And so I think that what I'll be talking about is how I'm leveraging Bitcoin Cash, education, other forms of activism to spark a global evolution to more liberty and prosperity in the developing world. And that's really something that, you know, I've been working on and I want to see happen.
Well, I am definitely looking forward to that talk, and I know a lot of others are as well. And I really cannot wait. For anyone who is interested, y'all can find tickets at coupdegras.whatthefuck. That is, it's coupdegras.wtf. coupdegras.wtf.
Love that domain.
I saw the .wtf domain and I had to spend the extra $5. So yeah, go on there. You can find a partial guest list. We're slowly updating it and adding more guest information as people send it to us. If anybody wishes to host a panel, because this is a very DIY event, very non-hierarchical, so if you wish to host a panel, do a Skillshare, a discussion, a debate, you have a film you want to show, you want to share your art, you play music, you dance, whatever. We have a cabaret on Mardi Gras Day. We're looking for more performers, so if you do any sort of acts that you think would fit, we've got some burlesque and comedy and music and things like that, so come check it out, and it's all raising funds for some amazing causes, mainly the Coup de Main Land Project, so we can buy more land and house more people, as well as for my current legal fundraiser, which, for those who are unaware, you can check out the interview I did on the Non-Surveyum podcast recently, or check out the post on c4ss.org. Anyways, is there anything else you would like to leave our audience with?
If anybody wants to connect, talk. Love to talk. You can find me on my username is George Donnelly, just one word, two N's, two L's, Telegram, Twitter, Facebook, Mastodon, basically everywhere. So, would love to talk to anybody.
Nice. Definitely connect and, learn something and join the cryptocurrency revolution. And, 100%. As always, I'd like to do a shout-out to Cameron Wright, Jason, and Anne Skeleton for your continued support. It's because of people like you that I'm able to do the work that I do. You can, subscribe. If you wish to support my work, you can subscribe, Patreon, Subscribestar. You can donate single donations, one-time donations with PayPal or coin payments. We got our T-Mill and Etsy stores, all that, all the fun shilling. And check out the link in the description below for that. And I will see you folks next time. Y'all have a wonderful day.
Thanks, Logan Marie.
Hey. Ooh la la, wee wee. Ooh la la, wee wee. Hey. Ooh la la. Hey. Ooh la la, wee wee. 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 Ooh la la.
Looking for M's like I lost a friend. Jump out of my bed like red or red. You go hold the egg, way to bring a check. When we talk, we collision cars. Keep us in your thoughts, fully dressed at the crack of dawn. Weapons heading off, I can hear them from the block. See them creeping through the fog. Season's greetings, now feeding season can start. Oh my God, look alive. Looking like I live life on a crooked line. Doing fine, you want maximum stupid, I am the guy.
First of all, fuck the fucking law. We is fucking raw, steak tartare. Oysters on the half jail, sushi bar. Life a bitch and the pussy feet. kids still fuck the raw. I'm a dog, I'm a dirty dog. Ha 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 ha. Oh, dirty bastard, go in your jaw. Shimmy, shimmy, y'all. Got the simmy in the hemi. Go and gimme, y'all. Pugilistic, my linguistics, RJ Ruder damage, y'all. And I rap it, pornographic, bitch, set up the camera.
Ooh la la, are we weak? Ooh la la, are we weak? Ooh la la, are we weak? Ooh la la, are we weak?
With disruption, I got you covered, I'm busting. My brother's a runner, he crushing, it's no discussion. I used to be muskin', I wasn't supposed to be nothing. Y'all fuckers corrupted, I'm up to something disgusting. My pockets are plumper this season, I love to dump them. I'm afraid of nothing but nothingness, ain't it something? Warmongers are dumping, a point and click at your pumpkin. You're suffering disruption, so put your kids in the oven.
Fuck a king or queen and all of their lost subjects. I pull my penis out and I piss on their shoes in public. People, we the pirates, the pride of this great republic. No matter what you order, motherfucker, we what you stuck with. Sorry. I used to love Bruce, but living my vida loca. Help me understand, I'm probably more of a joke. When we usher in chaos, just know that we did it smile. Cannibals on this island, inmates run the asylum.
Ooh la la,